What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg. And today's episode, we're going to continue to talk about the NBA draft. It's June now, about 23 days until round one, 24 days till round two. The Wizards currently own three picks, 6, 18, and 40. You've heard me talk about it at length the last couple of episodes, especially the last two where I talked about my big board at Dombo on to talk about some intriguing prospects. And I have another special guest on today. Draft analyst, draft expert, whatever you want to call him. My guy, Ben Pfeiffer. Thank you so much for joining the show to talk about the draft, Ben.
No problem. Thanks for having me on. It's when you said it's like 20 days away, I'm like, that's crazy. I thought it was like at least another month or two, but no, that's wild.
Yeah, Ben does great work. It's his YouTube channel is just his name, Ben Pfeiffer. You can find him there. Great articles on Basketball Insiders and other sites. So I'll link all of those in the description below if you want to read some of the scouting reports. I just read up on his one about Nolan Treyer because, as you know, I'm a big Nolan Treyer guy. And he did a nice dive into that and a bunch of other prospects as well. So make sure to check him out there. But what I want to do to start the show realistically is to give you kind of a scenario. We've talked a lot about the Wizards possibly trading up to number three. Philadelphia currently owns that slot. Maybe they want to move back and still take someone like Knipple at six, where he's more so mocked instead of three, pick up some more assets. Maybe they want to try to offload Paul George's contract, stuff like that. But for the Wizards to do this right, I think they'd have to be enticed enough about either Ace Bailey or VJ Edgecombe. So in your opinion, are either of those prospects worth giving up a decent haul to move up just three spots, or are you kind of more so against the move like that to take either Bailey or Edgecombe there?
Yeah, I would definitely be against that. I don't think this is a... I mean, I think trading up is generally not the strategy I like to employ, just because it's like having more picks, I think, is so valuable. Just because even as, you know, you can be as confident as you want in your draft valuations, but at some point, it's impossible to predict this stuff and just have... And the only real guarantee is having more picks. But no, I also think that, at least personally to me, I think some guys who I have above Bailey and Edgecombe are going to be available for the Wizards at six. So just from that perspective, I'd probably keep the pick.
I'm in the same boat. Like I have Bailey five on my board right now, and I have Edgecombe three, but I'm not as high. I think there's enough holes in their game to say I'm not going to move all my assets. I think I need a pretty polished prospect, right, to be willing to move up, especially if it's just three spots. And there's been reporting that Philadelphia is looking into guys like Malawak and Knipple, and Trey Johnson even at three. And so you get a wild card like Utah at five that could definitely take someone like Yegor Demon or someone out of the ordinary. You know, Washington could still sit at six and get one of those guys. It could fall a certain way. So exactly. If that's me again, I think I'm in line with you in terms of I'm not high enough on those two guys to be willing to move up into those slots. And I think what you've seen is kind of a consensus where obviously Flagg's going to go one. You'd be pretty surprised if Dylan Harper doesn't go number two to San Antonio. And the draft kind of starts at three. So let's just say for fun's sake, in this scenario, Bailey goes three, Edgecombe goes four, Trey Johnson goes five, and you're sat there at six, you're the Wizards. You have a guy like Jeremiah Fears, a shifty guard out of Oklahoma. You have Derek Queen, that's very polarizing prospect, right? 18 on some boards, as high as six on some boards. Kaman Malawak, Khan Knipple. If the top five goes as I said, who are you looking at for the Wizards to take at six?
For sure, my favorite guy would be Queen. I have him top three on my board. I have for a while. I think the world of him. And I think he's specifically a great Wizards fit because Alex Starr theoretically should cover some of his biggest weaknesses, which, like, you know, he's not a great interior defender for a big. And the floor spacing is questionable. Where Starr, I mean, we know he's going to be a great interior defender, great shot blocker and help. And I still believe in his jumper coming around. So just having that next to Queen is huge. And I think the Wizards still need that like primary offensive creator, a guy who they can just give the ball to and you know, create offense out of nothing. And Queen is one of the few guys in this draft who I really feel like has the ceiling to do that with his crazy explosiveness and his great change of pace and awesome handle and passing and finishing. Like he's just such a talented, unique player, even though there's definitely like downside and risk involved. I would much rather go for a guy like that than someone who I think is maybe safer, but can't really, you know, end up being a star one day. Because, you know, I'd much rather take a guy like Queen and miss than pass on him and have some other team have, you know, the best version of him when you really, really could have used him in Washington. Even though I do like Fears as well, and Knipple is would also be really good too. I like those guys quite a bit, but Fears would not Fears. Queen would probably be my main pick.
I'm glad we're on the same page. He's 8 on my board, but I could definitely see someone with a top 5 grade. I mean, 6'9", nearly 250. That's like a very unique build. You don't see that oftentimes in a league, and you see sometimes like it doesn't work out. And the main gripe I've seen people is I'm not as high on Colin Murray-Boyles, and he's kind of that undersized, I guess, bigger type prospect, and people compare him to Derek Queen all the time. But I think way more of Queen than I do of someone like CMB, a potential offensive hub where he's just so skilled for a guy his size. And like you mentioned, I'm more so always BPA over fit in the draft. But like when you consider Washington as so many of these young prospects already, you know, pairing a guy like Malawak and Sarr versus Queen and Sarr, I think Queen and Sarr is definitely a way better front court fit, kind of what Sarr maybe lacks, Queen has, and vice versa, especially on defense where Sarr is your rim protector and Queen can kind of do other things offensively that maybe Sarr can't. So I'm glad that you envision Queen there. Like you mentioned with Fears, right? I think we can go a little bit more in depth there. To me, he slightly edges over Queen. And if I'm the Wizards at 6 and the top 4 goes as it is, I'm deciding more so between Johnson and Fears, whoever falls. What's your kind of scouting report on Fears? Is, you know, some people don't buy that the defense can carry over as you know, more slender guard. The 28% shooting from three is something that people have kind of called out. But you mentioned this on your pod two episodes ago. Anthony Edwards shot 29% from three in college, right? And that was such a great point that you made, and I'm glad you made it because he just led the league in threes. Like, and Anthony Edwards is a way better prospect, I think, than Fears. But it shows that it doesn't necessarily always translate to where if you're a bad shooter in college, you're a bad shooter in the pros. Kind of expand on that point and why you think it would be, you know, plausible for Fears possibly to pick at 6.
Right. And it's just like 3-point percentage is not a good indicator of shooting talent, right? Because the sample is so small for a single college season. Like, NBA players will take like double or triple the amount of threes just in a season. And even then, you see like great shooters have entire, like, you know, halves of seasons or full seasons where they're just not making shots like they usually do. And I think Fears is a guy who everything else you look at, he's an excellent free throw shooter. His touch around the rim is great. He's a great mid-range pull-up shooter. He's great in the intermediate game. You know, all of the indicators that tend to project shooting growth, Fears passes with flying colors. And he also takes a good amount of threes. It's not like he doesn't take threes. Like, he's willing to take pull-ups, especially as the season progressed. He got more willing to just, you know, shoot off the dribble and take tougher shots and expand his capabilities. So I really do believe he's going to be a great shooter. And defensively, like I do worry, definitely, like the same level to which I worry with a lot of small guards. But again, I think you're drafting a guy like that for his offensive ceiling. And Fears is a guy who, like I said, I believe is going to be a shooter. I believe is going to be a primary, like, advantage creator, someone who can get to the paint whenever he wants, who's an excellent, you know, got great touch in the intermediate, draws a bunch of fouls, you know, arguably probably like the second best handle in the draft to me behind Harper. Just, you know, a really, really rock solid bet to me to be a great offensive player. And yeah, I still feel like the Wizards need that, like, offensive engine, the guy, again, who you can just give the ball to, create advantages, create separation off the dribble consistently. And then I think that's going to make life for everyone, you know, like Bub and Keyshawn and Bilal and then Sarr. Like, that's going to make everyone else's life easier. And those guys, especially Bilal and Sarr, right, they can help out Fears on the defensive end because those guys are just monsters with the amount of ground they can cover and the stuff they can do is help defenders. So I think the Wizards, assuming their, you know, young players develop as they should and as they, you know, we hope they can, I think are a good place for a player like Fears to just, like, you know, hopefully one day take keys of the offense and just let everything else fall around him.
I'm glad you mentioned the offensive point. Like, I think a lot of Wizards fans have gone into this, we need two-way players and only two-way players, because that's kind of the philosophy they take in the last couple of years. But you need offense, right? This is a team that was 30th in offensive rating and offensive efficiency last season, 27th in points per game. I think a guy like Fears, who can come in and kind of be maybe a lead guard, definitely a facilitator, could work. And I understand you have Jordan Poole, but don't know if he's going to be here for the future. You want to put a guy like Fears in here and kind of draft. Like, I've seen that as well, like drafting for fit versus best player available. The prime example I always bring up is the Cavs, right? A couple years ago, they had just drafted Colin Sexton in the top of the draft. Then they go and take Garland because he's just the best player there. And you're like, why would you take two lead guards back to back? But that's kind of worked out for them, right? I mean, Darius Garland's been phenomenal. What's your philosophy more so on that? Like, are you sometimes fit when it matters, or are you always best player available? What's your philosophy there?
No, I tend to agree with you that best player available is generally the way to go. I think if you have, you know, like a tier break where you have a couple guys that are in the same range, and, you know, then I think you can take your favorite fit or whoever fits best. But for me, like, rosters in the NBA change so fast, faster than like even other sports, I think. We're like, you know, the Wizards roster, you know, sure, they might need a, you know, a wing or something, but in 2 years, right? Like their fit, their needs might look totally different, and their roster might look totally different for reasons that we can't predict coming. You know, some things will happen that we don't foresee, right? But I do think the things that matter are, one, like your timeline, right? Where it's like, you know, Washington makes sense to take a guy like Fears or Queen because they're still relatively early in their rebuild, and they can, you know, still afford to take one of these like high ceiling younger players. Where, like, you know, I don't think it would make as much sense to take like a 22, 23 year old, like, I don't know, like a Neat Clifford, who I love, but probably just doesn't make as much sense for the timeline. But also just like your ecosystem, right? It's like, do you have a good coach for development? You know, does your organization have a track record of developing players, of, you know, giving young players leashes? And I think, at least from what we're seeing from the Wizards, like, it seems like they're hopefully trending that way, where I really appreciated that they were very open about their prioritization of young player development last year in a way that I think a lot of bad teams aren't these days. So I do definitely give them some credit for that. And it makes me at least definitely intrigued to see like what they can do in the future and how they develop this current core. But yeah, I tend to agree with you that it's just like, most of the time you wanted to take the best talent on the board, and not freak out about fit in most scenarios. You know, there's always exceptions, but
and I say that to preface what I was going to say with kind of my next point is the conversation over Con Canipo out of Duke at six. Like, again, this is a guy that's my sixth best prospect. I have him slightly above Fears, but in my case, as someone who's always best player available, I'd be willing to take Fears or Derek Queen over Canipo, because I just think the Wizards need more. I think Khan's going to be a very solid player, but I think the Wizards need to go for people other than complementary pieces. Like, I don't know if Khan can traditionally develop into a guy that you're looking at as a number two or a number one option. And that's kind of where I'd skew. I'm curious to see what your thoughts would be on that perspective, where Washington might be opting for a star, and while Khan might be the best player available there, they might want to look elsewhere for higher ceiling in guys like Fears and Queen.
Yeah, it's definitely reasonable. I probably think more highly of Khan's ceiling than a lot of people. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he did develop and it's like a really good number two option. Probably not going to ever be a primary guy. That's just such a high ask. But I do think a guy who's just like that crazy of a shooter and a passer, there just aren't a lot of, you know, wing-sized plus players. Like, obviously, you know, he's not the tallest or longest guy in the world, but, you know, not a ton of 6'5 plus guys who are as good of shooters and passers as Khan is, you know, just to kind of be basic about it. So I'd be okay with it, just because I think there is definitely a chance that he gets really up there, but I think it's a smaller chance than like a Fears or a Queen. So I'd probably prefer one of those two over Khan, even though I think he would be a great option too.
Yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page there. It's one of those rare cases where you kind of skew from your draft ideology, where I at least skew for my best player available, just based on the unique situation Washington's in with so many young players. I think they've kind of gotten to a point where they can take a chance on somebody, even if he might be a little bit not be best player available. And so I think they're in a unique situation where they might skew from that draft ideology. And so we touched on a lot of the prospects that could be in there at six. There are some wild cards, though, that I've kind of seen creeping up draft boards. You have your Yegor Devin, 6'9 playmakers. You have your Noah Sanju. You have all of those guys. Is there somebody that's not necessarily we have talked about yet that you would be willing to take as high as number six?
That's a good question. I think we covered most of the players who I'd like really want to take. This high, like I wouldn't be, you know, obviously the guys who I have like 6, 7, 8 on my board are like Ace and VJ and like Trey Johnson, like the guys who might go ahead. I would be intrigued by Colin Murray-Boyles. I definitely would. I'm not as high on him as some people are who have him in like their top 5 or top 3 even, but I understand the appeal where you can just build a pretty ridiculous defensive foundation with him and Sarr and Bilal. Like, he really has a strong case as the best defensive prospect in the draft. And he's like a really, really high level defensive guy in terms of his ability to switch and play the passing lanes and protect the rim some. Like, I don't think he's a 5, but you have Sarr, so it's fine. Also, just like a perfect complement body type wise, right? Like, Sarr is a leaner, skinnier, you know, lankier guy. And probably always will be, even if he can add muscle, whereas CMB is so like thick and compact and strong and sturdy. So that makes sense. Obviously, the offense is the issue, and I have definitely issues with it, where you're really going to have to buy like his like driving game to take him high, I think, because the shooting is just very questionable. And obviously, he's probably not a wing in terms of his handle. But if he can get there, then I can see the vision where he's an intriguing offensive player. And obviously the passing is great and the interior scoring is great. Wouldn't be my like primary choice, but I would definitely be intrigued by it. Like, I wouldn't dislike that at all. And I would be certainly a bit like just like curious to see how that goes. Because I can definitely imagine that being like a fit that makes sense. Like, I'd understand why they do it, and I can see it end up working out really well, even if I'd probably go in different directions personally.
It's a very interesting take, but you kind of hit it on the head with his defense is great. You know, his ability to switch and kind of play multiple defensive positions is obviously something that's quite intriguing. But you also mentioned the questionable shooting, the offense. Will it translate? Will he be a guy that's really good on defense? And I don't necessarily respect him on offense. I think that's kind of why he's skewed on some boards. Some people are high on him because they buy the offense. Some people aren't because they don't buy it. But if Washington takes him, I'd be surprised personally. I don't know if I could realistically get behind that pick. Like you mentioned as well, like, this is a guy that you could see jumping up at the 6, but realistically the people that we talked about before are more so the people that you would take at 6. And like you mentioned, it's always nice to have multiple picks, right? You mentioned not wanting to trade up. The Wizards have just that because of the pick they acquired, took on Marcus Smart's bloated salary, got the 18th pick from the Memphis Grizzlies. And there are definitely some intriguing prospects still in that range. From Wizards Twitter and more so from what I've seen, you know, guys like Cedric Coward, major improvement every year of college, 7'2 wingspan, shot very well at the combine, 17-25 from the 3-point drill, second in that. Guy like Nolan Treyer, who I have 16 on my board, I'm pretty high on. Athletic, good defense, but the shooting is pretty poor. You know, Rashear Fleming, unique wingspan and combination of shooting as well, but also against A-10 competition. You also have guys like Thomas Sober out of Georgetown. Is there certain guys in that range out of the ones that I mentioned that you're more so high on than others? Because those are the four that I've seen talked about the most.
Out of those four specifically, definitely highest on Sorber. And I can see the Wizards doing it. Like, they obviously have Sarr, and I think Sorber is a 5, but it can't hurt. But I think having really good front court depth is always a good thing. And especially, I think Sorber like has a chance to be a shooter, so that obviously make things easier. But yeah, I think Sorber is like closer to a lottery guy than where he's being projected at the moment. Just like in massive, you know, interior defensive presence with a little bit of mobility to switch onto the perimeter, but not tons. But again, you have Sarr for that. This is a uniquely good situation the Wizards have themselves in because of Sarr. And then Sorber is just such a good offensive player. Incredibly good interior scorer, great passer, great ball handler for a big, like, can do a lot of the same stuff that Sarr can do while being a much more polished and ready interior paint scorer. So that would be definitely my favorite of that group, just from like a talent perspective and who I think are the best players. Coward and Fleming definitely would be interesting as well. I'm not as high on them as some people, though I do still have them in this range, like the late teens, early 20s, where both are projects for sure, and older players who are projects definitely still worry me a little bit, right? Because they're both like 20, you know, around 21, and either are, in my opinion, going to be ready to play high level NBA minutes right away. But again, the Wizards don't really need that, and I think it kind of just like depends on what you want there. If you want a guy with a higher defensive ceiling, I'd take Fleming. And if you want a guy with a higher offensive ceiling, I'd take Coward. And then I also like Traore too. I would take Traore as well if you don't like take Fears or someone in the first round. I think Traore has kind of more of a case as like a non-lead guard than people think. Like, obviously people like him because of the crazy speed and burst and explosiveness and ability to get to the paint, but he's been an efficient catch and shoot guy this year. His defense to me has been really impressive. He's improved it as a decision maker throughout the year. Like, again, playing lead guard for, you know, a good team in a really good league. Like I think even comparing the French league to like the German league where Seraph and Essangue play, like it's just a higher level of competition than most international leagues, beyond like the Spanish league and like the Euro league. So I really value what Traore has been able to do in that situation. And I certainly wouldn't mind them taking a swing on him in that range. And just another guy who I think might be there who's going to fall too far is Jace Richardson, who is maybe kind of like, I don't know if it's as logical of a fit because you kind of took a shorter guy who's not a point guard in Bub last year, mm-hmm. where I think Jace is the same, where he's like a smaller guy or shorter guy. He has a good reach and wingspan, who's I don't think is a point guard, but just so damn talented. And even though is a small guard who isn't like an incredible passer or, you know, live dribble advantage creator, just an unbelievable shot maker, incredibly smart, high feel off ball player, with real defensive potential. And he's another one where it's just like, if you want, you know, maybe you get to the 18th pick and Jace is a full tier ahead of anyone else who's left on your board. So it's like, we're just going to take the guy who we think is really good and figure out the rest later. But yeah, I don't know if there's anybody else that immediately pops in that range who I think are like, you know, Wizards fits that make a lot of sense. But yeah, those guys, I think we covered it.
Jace is interesting, right? Because I think the size is kind of what people are low on in terms of, you know, are people going to be hunting him on defense with bigger NBA players and stuff. But like you mentioned, the offensive talent is just off the charts. And I could definitely see for a Wizards team that, like we mentioned earlier, lacks offense and lacks offensive creators, they could take a swing for Jace, obviously. Yeah,
he's going to be an impactful offensive player from day one. I mean, like, he, mm-hmm. you know, like, even as good as, you know, flashes, guys like Bub and Keyshawn and Bilal have also had, like, you know, they all, like, started their career, as most rookies do, like, you know, not very efficient, not very, you know, not very polished, even though the flashes are there. Whereas Jace, I think, comes in and is probably going to be an efficient scorer pretty quickly. And that's pretty rare for a guy his age. Like, he's going to be, you know, still 18, I believe, on draft night, or just above 18, which is, you know, again, actually, no, he's a little older. I don't know why I thought he was 18. He's going to be closer to 20, but still, you know, a sub 20-year-old who I think is going to be really efficient and effective early on in his career. And obviously, I think that means he can develop into something more later down the line.
It's a good point. And I want to talk a little bit more in depth about Traore, because like you mentioned, you're also decently high on him. And I just, for me, it's the effort on defense, the lateral quickness, the size to be able to defend, you know, multiple positions instead of just the guard position. The shooting, like you mentioned as well, over his last 10, he was 43% from three. So again, I'm not saying he's the greatest shooter in the world, but you've seen, you know, gradual improvement from him as well on that end. I was very interested to see your comparisons, right? Because you likened him to Scoot Henderson or Dennis Schroeder in the league. Kind of take me through those comparisons and kind of why you think he could develop like them.
He's kind of a tough one to compare to, honestly. I don't love the Scoot one. Is kind of like, I could see the early career playing out like that. But honestly, it's going to be different because he's not going to have like the top three pick expectations. And he, I think, is probably a little bit better of a shooter, like not as dynamic. But again, you're a similar guy who's just like so damn fast, can crack the defense whenever. But there's going to be rawness and there's going to be the kind of development track. But then I see a guy like Schroeder, right? Like, who's been a really valuable player on a lot of teams throughout his career. Like, he was a good playoff rotation guy for the Pistons this year. I mean, he was good for like four teams this year. I mean, he wasn't good in Golden State, actually, but he was good for like three different teams, like two or three teams this year. I think Traore, while, you know, obviously not the shooter is that Schroeder is now, has the same kind of like game breaking speed and downhill ability. You know, he's not a great finisher at the basket. I think he could be a better defensive player than Schroeder, even though Schroeder was good on defense this year and in the playoffs, where Traore, like you said, I mean, great on-ball defender, super quick laterally. I think he's a really smart off-ball defender, too. Makes these good long rotations with his speed and with his size. And I think I just trust him a lot to continue developing on defense. But, yeah, he's, like, another tough one to find, like, a really good comparison to. And there's definitely, like, ways that it just doesn't work with, like, you know, guards who are kind of struggle to score efficiently. But I also don't worry about that as much as some people because of his age and because of the role he has, like super high usage lead guard on a pro team as an 18-year-old. It's like not an easy thing to do. And I think Traore's, like you said, has definitely continually improved throughout the year, has become more comfortable as a scorer, as a shot maker, right? And I think, you know, he just like takes so many off dribble threes that kind of lowers his percentages as well, which is good. I want him to take those, right? Like teams go under, he's going to take the three, which is a good thing. Even if they're not making them at this point, I think that's good for his development. The fact that he's willing to, you know, take the shots the defenses give him, because that's the only way he's going to get better, right? Is he's going to you know, see those coverages and get practice against them and get reps. But yeah, like you said, I'm definitely lower on Traore than I once was like before the season, but I'm still relatively high on him. And I think he's a good prospect who, yeah, in this like mid late teens range, I think is a really attractive option for a lot of teams.
Now, I want to run one by you, right? Because I think in most drafts, you have your guys that you're just way higher on than consensus. You have your guys that you're lower on too, where you don't necessarily understand how someone could have maybe a guy like CMB top three where you might not have him that high and vice versa. For me, the guy that I'm way high on than consensus in this draft is Drake Powell out of UNC. Again, I just think that the rare size, the rare combo of size, strength, and his athleticism tests at the combine were off the charts. He was top 10 in all the top five major athletic categories. He had the best standing vert and max vert. A guy that was a solid defender at UNC, 48% from the field, 38% from three, and you know 6.5 points per game. He's not going to be your tremendous offensive talent right away. But in a league that's more so shifting to two-way talent, especially on the defensive end, where you can kind of play both sides and one side really well on defense, that's kind of why he's so high on my board. Is that some? Am I insane for having him 11 on my board? Is that not something that you can get behind? What are your thoughts on Powell as a prospect?
I think it's reasonable. He's someone who I've talked about as like someone I'm not crazy high on, but like I get it. Like there's some players people are really high on that I just like really struggle to see the vision for at that level. But Powell, it's like if I squint, I can understand it because he is just such a freak athlete, like you said. Obviously the size and the length and the explosion, but like so damn quick laterally. That's to me where I think he has so much potential as a point of attack defender with how quick he can shuffle his feet and cut off guys moving laterally. And obviously he's a great open floor athlete. He's pretty flexible. I think, you know, if someone's going to quote unquote reach on Powell and take him higher than consensus, I think it seemed like the Wizards again makes sense where they have time to wait for him to end up being a good contributor. Whereas, you know, I don't think it would make sense for a team that's like closer to a window, unless you're someone like, I don't know, like an OKC or Miami who just like has great development, or OKC especially has so many players they can just afford to take project guys. But most teams, you know, I think Powell is one where definitely the shot is going to be a swing where I'm not so confident in his shot, but obviously, if he has, you know, if he ends up being like a good shooter, he's probably going to end up being a really solid player. Where I think there were some pretty interesting like driving and passing flashes this year as well. I'm definitely more worried about just like how he ends up contributing on offense at the NBA level. But just from a pure like physical tools standpoint, I think he's like a much better athlete than like a Cedric Howard or even Fleming in some ways. And like Carter Bryant, I think he's probably a better athlete than, if we're just talking these like, you know, these 3-and-D wing forwardy types that people like. I think Powell makes sense just because of the crazy tools. So I get it. I mean, I think at 18, like I said, even though it would be higher than I have on my board, it wouldn't be a pick that I hated at all, just because I think it makes sense for where Washington's at.
He definitely a project, right? And I think the defense could be solid from day one. I think the offense will definitely take some time to develop. But I think, like you mentioned, a team like the Wizards that has, like you said, shown an ability to just play their young guys and get them the NBA reps, I think he's someone that could benefit greatly from getting those early NBA reps. We talked about 6 and 18, and I kind of want to briefly touch on prospects at 40, right? it's a little harder to project than 6 and 18 because like the draft can go so many different ways before the second round. And I also think the Wizards could trade out of this pick realistically if they want to make a move up for someone they covet in the late lottery. But there's certainly names that are intriguing in this range. Are there anybody, or is there anybody in this range that you think if they're there at that point, you have to take them? Like you have them way higher than consensus. They're not projected to go that high. And if they're still available at 40, you think the Wizards definitely need to snag, in there.
Good question. Just looking at the highest, like the players around that range, consensus wise that I'm pretty high on, I think Cam Jones would be a cool one.
I like Cam Jones.
Just like a really talented player with the ball. Obviously, you know, the knocks on him are like he's older, right? And he's not like a crazy, crazy explosive athlete, but was one of the best players in the country this year. Just a dominant offensive player, like elite finisher, incredible ball handler, gets to the rim whenever he wants. I think it's like didn't shoot the three well this year, but I think is going to be a fine shooter. Yeah, he's just someone who I think can help everyone, right? Like he, especially for a team like Washington, if you're going to take an older player, it should be someone, right, who can contribute and isn't going to like dominate the ball and going to, you know, take away reps from other players. Where obviously I think Cam is great on the ball. And I think his ability to create and to pass is going to be great to get easy shots for the other young players, but like he can cut in space and play without the ball. And again, just someone who I think is like a clear first round talent that could go beyond the first round. So he's another one who I would like quite a bit. I don't think Adu Thierro is going to fall that far. Seems unlikely, but he would be great as just another like really athletic wing guy to go after. Another one who I don't think is going to fall that far is Noah Penda, a French wing who is one of the best defensive players in the entire draft. I think that's a guy who like has a chance to be one of these, like, oh, how the hell did he go 32nd and he's making all defense teams? Like he's got a chance to be a guy like that and has enough offensive flashes with his passing and some of the driving stuff that I think you can project forward. So, but again, another one that I don't think is going to be at 40. If a guy like Jani Broome falls, I think that would be interesting, or like a Ryan Kalkbrenner. Like if one of these like older bigs who I think are just going to be really solid, and again, having good front court depth for a team regardless of where you're at is so good just to boost the floor. Broome, obviously, like shorter than Kalkbrenner, but more skilled with the ball. Kalk, just a gigantic guy who's so good at protecting the rim and is, you know, an improving shooter, a nice passer. I'd like those guys quite as well. And then a couple others that I think would be good are, I love Kobe Brea in that range. Someone who is like legitimately pound for pound, I think the best shooter in the draft, where he is like his career, like volume and 3-point efficiency are like in rarefied air. Like they're in like the Sam Hauser tier where, you know, some of the most special tall shooters in recent memory. Like he's not bringing you a ton else, but he's going to be an elite shooter. Like there are levels to this and like 42-43%+ on like 700 plus career 3-point attempts, a lot off the dribble, a lot tough off movement. Like it's just not a lot of guys at 6'7" who are actually doing that. So yeah, those are some names that I like. Anyone else who you have that, you know, I can talk about, but off the top of my head, those are the main guys who come to mind as players. So I'd like them to go for in that range.
You know, I like all of them. I have Noah Penda at 20 on my board. I think he's a phenomenal prospect. If he's there at 40, I mean, 100%. Like, I would be willing to trade up even if he's there at 30, especially on a team like the Wizards that values defense as much as they have, especially with Will Dawkins coming in as GM. I think he's a can't-miss defender realistically, and if he falls to 40, that's pretty much a dream come true. I'm curious what you think of a guy like Tyrese Proctor, right? Like, a guy that didn't come out last year, returned to school, played a lot better. You know, what are your thoughts on Proctor?
Proctor's solid. I probably wouldn't take him in the early second round, like earlier second round, just because I don't know how much of his ceiling there is besides like a bench rotation guard. But he could be solid as like a 3-and-D-ish guard, right? He's like a good shooter, can play off the ball, can be a solid defender. But I don't really see anything like super special or high level about him to take him over some of the other guys I mentioned. If you're going to take a Duke guy, I'd prefer Sion James, who I think again, if we're talking about like the defensive ethos, like he is built like crazy, imposing on ball defender, can get in front of guys and really shut them off, and like has some really interesting skills too. Like, even though Proctor is like a guard, like Sion played nominal point guard for Duke. Like he would bring the ball up and initiate the offense. Like they trusted him to actually make decisions and have responsibilities in a way that I think probably more than Proctor at times. So if Sion is a guy who, you know, definitely isn't as bankable of a shooter as Proctor, but he's someone, if he ends up shooting, could be really good. But, you know, again, at 40, it's like in the second round, it's hard to be too like anti anyone, but I probably wouldn't love I mean, I'd go other directions, but it would be fine.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm glad you mentioned Sion, because he's a guy that no one talks about, because Duke has so many good prospects, blue chip prospects in this draft. But he was phenomenal for them, especially on defense. Good build as well for that position. And I want to end it on this, and this is how I usually end it. I ended my last couple episodes with this when I bring on a guest. Like I mentioned, there's definitely prospects in this draft that you are way higher on than consensus. And is there someone like that for you in this draft class where people aren't necessarily putting this guy as high as you are, but you're confident that you know, you have it right, and this guy's going to be, you know, pretty good pick in this draft?
I mean, I feel like we've talked about a good amount of these guys. Like Queen, for sure, is a guy I'm higher on than consensus. Jace, Sorber, kind of briefly, but like Neat Clifford. It's just going to be one of these like older guys who gets faded because he's older and is awesome. So he's someone who I'm definitely higher on than consensus. Like you said, Penda as well, Cam Jones. Probably higher on Walter Clayton than consensus as well. I feel like he didn't even get like the tournament bump that people expected him to, at least in terms of stock. Like it could be crazier, but I do think his level of shooting combined with the impressive athleticism is worth like a pick closer to the top 20 than he's necessarily getting credit for. And then a couple second round guys who I really like, who I think are being underrated. Max Shulga, VCU. Guard, wing, yeah. Who's just like an awesome shooter who can really pass and dribble and create a little bit. There's like another one of these nuclear shooter types who's maybe not as crazy a shooter as someone like Kobe Brea, who we talked about, but is a better, you know, driver and passer and all of this stuff. I really like Vlad Golden, the other Michigan center. Honestly, much preferred him to Wolf this year. I mean, I think Wolf is a better prospect just because he's like younger and
for sure.
I think you're closer than people give them credit for. And Golden's obviously older, but again, you're like a gigantic rim protecting center who's also mobile and can pass and dribble a little bit. So, big fan of him. And then for some other even like deeper guys who aren't even in the consensus top 60, Javon Small, West Virginia point guard. Just like a really rock solid 3-and-D guard bet who has a good handle and can get downhill with speed, but is a great shooter and point of attack defender. Anyone else who I really like, who I don't think is getting enough love? I think that's about it in terms of my favorite sleepers and just guys who I think I'm higher on, but.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you so much, Ben, for coming on and sharing your knowledge. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, you can find Ben on YouTube at Ben Pfeiffer, lowercase b, lowercase p. You can find him on Twitter as well at BJPF _. Always posts great draft content, and his written content is available in the link below as well. But again, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all your vast knowledge about these prospects. I'm sure Wizards fans really appreciate it.
For sure. Thanks for having me. Always enjoy talking the draft. And I'm excited to see what the Wizards do. Always cool to have a team with multiple picks. Fairly high in the draft, and you know, a team I think has made some pretty solid draft choices over the last couple of years. So excited to see how they continue to build on that process.
Of course. Thank you again, Ben, for coming on. That's gonna wrap it up for this episode. Go Wiz.